Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Niravishesha Shunyavadi Paschatidishatane Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Garadhara Sivasadi Gaurabhaktivinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Warning, this video contains matter that could disturb your mind if you believe that the GBC can do no wrong and everything they do must be divine. What I'm about to say is only for mature adults. I'm not going to say anything blasphemous, but there is a strong dose of realism. Strong things to say, but I will try to do so by stating facts and making logical deductions, logical observations from them. No name calling by myself, although I will discuss some serious name calling by some senior members of ISKCON. I really would prefer if we could only talk of Krishna, but as is the history, recurs within the history of religions, especially in this Kali Yuga, there are institutional, theological, social issues to deal with that can be highly acerbic, but still they need to be dealt with. I was asked to give a message to the GBC, a 3-minute message, concerning my stance on the Bureau, the legal managing body of the ISKCON Society within India, the Bureau's having petitioned the GBC to consult them before the GBC took any decision on the female Diksha Guru issue, FDG issue. The GBC's ignoring that, going ahead and making a resolution that ratified the proposal for having female Diksha Gurus, and the subsequent response of the Bureau to ask the GBC to rescind this. So this is a very crucial time, dangerous time in the history of ISKCON, where leaders are very much pitted against each other. My first point is that over and above the FDG issue, there's another major issue, which is that a substantial number of the GBC members are either demons or crazy. I'll explain that. My godbrother, Kalakanta Prabhu, an initiating guru within ISKCON in America, lives in America. I've known him since many, many years, and respected him, looked up to him in many ways. He has publicly stated, he has given a statement to a journalist who subsequently reported what he said in a major newspaper in Britain. He publicly said that opposition to FDGs, or Actually, let me just clarify. I'm not totally opposed to the idea of FDGs, but as Prabhupada said, very few exceptional cases. If they're on the level of Janavamata, fine. Anyway, he had said that opposition to FDGs is latent misogyny. The buzzword here is misogyny, which means hatred of women as a class. So anyone who either hates all women is either a demon or is severely mentally imbalanced. So him having said this, and almost half of the GBCs who voted on this having voted against the FDG resolution, means that a substantial number of the GBC members, if what Kalakanta Prabhu said is correct, are either demons who hate women, or they are severely mentally imbalanced. On the other hand, if what Kalakanta Prabhu said in using the word misogyny is untrue, then he and those who support him, his statement didn't go, it went unchallenged from the leadership or GBC, they're either in some kind of paranoiac illusion that many members of this Krishna conscious movement are misogynists, demons, or crazy in a nasty way. So if they're in this paranoiac illusion that many members, including senior members, including gurus, GBC members, sannyasis, are either demons or nastily crazy, then it would seem that they themselves are mentally imbalanced. I mean, is it really true that so many senior devotees are misogynists? They hate women? Who makes such an accusation is maybe them, if it's not true, then maybe themselves they're mentally imbalanced or deliberately making accusations against devotees, which accusing them of something horrendous. To make such an accusation to accuse devotees of being either demons or crazy because you have some disagreement with them, well, maybe it's more expected of a demon to make such an accusation. So it appears that by this statement, it appears that one or other side, is extremely badly situated. It seems that who can make such an accusation if it's not true? And personally, I don't see hatred of women within ISKCON. To make such an accusation, it almost seems like the accuser hates those he's accusing. Either way, it's inauspicious. If he is true, it's inauspicious, very inauspicious, that so many leaders of ISKCON are either demons or crazy. And if it's not true and he's just making scurrilous accusations, it's also highly inauspicious that such a senior and respected man should do such a thing. We're descending to the level of Republican versus Democratic, bordering on hatred in the United States of America. I'm going to read something which I came across on the internet, on theatlantic.com. It's a respected journal. American politics as is at risk of becoming a war of religiosity versus secularism by proxy, where both sides see the other as a catastrophic political force that must be destroyed at all costs. Is this what is going on now in our ISKCON, that pro-FDG, anti-FDG, each sees the other as a catastrophic political force that must be destroyed at all costs? Is this what's going on? Regardless of which side wins next year, The Atlantic, another quote, regardless of which side wins next year, the divide between red and blue America is likely to only grow wider. Now, that statement, which has not been retracted, which has not been challenged or apologized for by the higher level of the GBC, it was posted. The whole report was posted on dandavats.com, which is more or less the official website, semi-official, we could say, of ISKCON. It's shocking to me that the official website of a society that's trying to position itself as a respectable religious institution could publicize, as if to endorse, such a statement, such an accusation against a large segment of its official leadership. What to speak of its unofficial leadership or senior members who don't agree that with the GBC's stance on FDG. Now, this Dandavats is practically official. In the GBC's budget, they support it with big money. The GBC puts big money into that website. It's their, it's the propaganda outlet, you could say. Oh, trying to, let's be a little kind here. It's trying to put a good face on ISKCON to the world. And to, of course, the world doesn't care much what ISKCON does, but to at least to the world of ISKCON members or those who visit Dandavats. So the GBC support dandavats.com with big money. They don't generate funds themselves. They tax the temples to get the. So if you give to ISKCON temples, if you donate to ISKCON temples, you are contributing to saying that there are demons or crazies on the GBC, plus the India leadership, which almost unanimously stood against this. I'm not saying that there are demons or crazies on the GBC, please don't misquote me. But that is the logical conclusion from this accusation of misogyny. Now, the real major problem is that there is a deep, deep divide among those who are for and those who are against. And the GBC is not neutral. It's not trying to find a harmonious solution. It's supporting one side with nasty rhetoric, misogyny. It's supporting by publicizing that. This means that the issue at this point, it's not philosophical, it's political, using any and all means to push it through. If not, why did the GBC not want to discuss with the Bureau? It's very dismissive and arrogant when the Bureau members, who are the leaders of, or the, at least the legal body the members of the legal body of that oversees ISKCON in India, when they say, look, this is, we don't agree with this, there's something wrong with this, and the GBC simply ignores them and pushes it through. So I was asked to give a 3-minute message, it's going to be a lot more, it's already a lot more, to convey to the GBC what I feel about this. But they're not listening. If they don't want to listen to the combined India leaders, why should they listen to me? Why don't they listen? Politics. I'll explain that. That's a heavy accusation, no doubt. They don't listen because they think they can get away with it. There is a book called Hare Krishna Transformed by E. Burke Rochford, who is a scholar who, he's retired now, but much of his career was going back to 1970s or early 1980s. Was studying ISKCON, especially in America. He made a book called Hare Krishna Transformed. Within that was one chapter on early attempted opposition to feminism within ISKCON by some loyal members of ISKCON. And part of the chapter which deals with that discusses attempts by the anti-feminist camp to get the GBC to act on what was claimed to be, and clearly by any Vaishnava definition, was blasphemy of Srila Prabhupada and of Lord Rama. It didn't mention the whole thing in the book. Some very bad things were said about Srila Prabhupada and about Lord Rama by some decidedly feminist, at that time, members of ISKCON. And there was an attempt by certain anti-feminist members of ISKCON to get the GBC to act on this, which they didn't do. And the author of Hare Krishna Transformed, on page 157 of that book, reports that he interviewed a GBC member about this. And I'm just going to quote what the GBC member said, that why they didn't back up. Why they didn't back up what the blasphemy, the clamor against the blasphemy. Why did they not take action? So the GBC member, who is unidentified, said, quote, "It was politically safe just to ignore them, and we did," unquote. Politically safe. So why is the GBC not listening to the ISKCON India leaders? Because they think it is politically safe to do so. They think they can get away with it. Unfortunately, if truth be told, since 2000, the year 2000, with the formation of the women's ministry in ISKCON, it's been a political body. There's been simply politics on issues in the name of women's rights. Like secular feminists, these devotees, I'm not saying they're not devotees, but these devotees who have taken the stance that women in ISKCON should have the same rights as men. So like secular feminists, they are convinced that they are right. There is nothing to discuss on this matter. They're axiomatically, obviously correct. And anyone who disagrees with them is a misogynist. If you don't agree with us, it's not that you've got any good reason to do so, but because you're a misogynist. It means that you're demoniac and mentally imbalanced, or mentally imbalanced. Interestingly, I looked in the, let's rephrase that, in the Chambers Thesaurus, I looked in for the synonyms of the word misogyny, and the first synonym that came up is anti-feminism. Just see, this is supposed to be representative of the English language. The first synonym given for misogyny is anti-feminism. The feminists have done their job so well in defining feminism in the mass psyche that the word misogyny has become identified, anti-feminism, if you don't agree with the feminist agenda, then you're a misogynist. You're practically criminally bad. There's nothing to discuss with you. You're just wrong, 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 and wrong. You must be wrong if you don't agree with this. It's an emotional attack. If men, actually it's not just men who are anti-feminist, there are women also, but the idea is that if you don't allow women to get what they want, you're anti-women. No man wants to be thought of or to think of himself as being anti-woman. Well, maybe there are some. Maybe there are some misogynists. It's not that the world is populated with a huge number of misogynists, as certain feminists would have us believe. So no one, if it's propagated that unless women get equal rights, you're against women, it seems fair to give them equal rights. In Krishna consciousness, also, we're not the body. So we should be equal. However, our most worshipable Srila Prabhupada taught, and Shastra teaches, and tradition teaches, that all living beings are spiritually equal, but there are materially different roles. Males and females within human society have different roles. Srila Prabhupada didn't appoint any women GBCs, or temple presidents, or sannyasis. Women traveling or preaching alone about this Srila Prabhupada, he replied when he was asked about problems in society today. He was responding to what is the Krishna conscious solution to problems in society today. And he was asked that women want equal rights with men. How can they be satisfied? Srila Prabhupada replied, everything will be satisfied. Just like our women, Krishna conscious, they are working. They don't want equal rights with men. It is due to Krishna consciousness. They are cleansing the temple. They are cooking very nicely. They are satisfied. They never said that I have to go to Japan for preaching like Prabhupada. They never say. This is artificial. So Krishna consciousness means work in his constitutional position. The women, men, when they remain in their constitutional position, there will be no artificial. This is from a morning walk on May the 27th, 1974. Now, the contention is that we need to have female Diksha Gurus within ISKCON for preaching in America or in the West in general today. Because today's Western youth largely judge religious organizations by how they treat women. This is the contention. Well, sometimes disciples brought to Srila Prabhupada some contentions of non-devotees and raised them. And sometimes Srila Prabhupada would take the stance that actually you yourself share that feeling. In the mid-1970s, Srila Prabhupada dealt with legal attacks on ISKCON in America by challenging his disciples to vigorously preach in the courts directly from his books in order to show how his teachings are genuine and authentic. His disciples were afraid, but Srila Prabhupada, he became enlivened by such attacks because his personal faith that the teachings of Shastra on every subject, including the position of women, is his faith in that was absolutely strong. Controversies like this require us to demonstrate such faith in Prabhupada's words. From Bhagavad Gita, as it is, chapter 17, text 15, Srila Prabhupada writes there, "The process of speaking in spiritual circles is to say something upheld by the scriptures. One should at once quote from scriptural authority to back up what he is saying." In Srila Prabhupada's books, it's very clear that there are many statements which, from the vantage point of Western, liberal, secular Western youth today, would be considered sexist or even misogynist. But if we think for a moment that Srila Prabhupada was a hater of women, then we have no spiritual standing whatsoever. If we can't stand by Srila Prabhupada's statements and live by them and run our society on that basis rather than on the basis of what the whole world may think, in opposition to what Srila Prabhupada taught us, we shouldn't try to compromise or hide whatever Srila Prabhupada very clearly taught us. Here's a quote from Srila Prabhupada's purport to Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 18, Text 5. "At the present moment, it has become fashionable to disobey the unimpeachable directions given by the acharyas and liberated souls of the past." The idea that we need to have female Diksha gurus so that we can preach in America goes against the research by reputable sources in such matters. For instance, a 2018 study by Pew Research states that more Americans are now converting to Islam than ever before. There are some claims that up to 20,000 Americans from diverse ethnic backgrounds convert to Islam every year. And as is well known, among all traditional religions, Islam, at least the propaganda is like that, Muslims themselves wouldn't agree, among all the traditional religions, Islam has the worst reputation regarding treatment of women. So the idea that we have to get in tune with the modern, liberal, secular way of thinking about women, otherwise we can't preach and spread Krishna consciousness in America, it also ignores the undeniable history that all established mainstream religions have pretty much the same traditional views about women, which from the modern, liberal, or postmodern, liberal, secular standpoint would be considered repressive. Universal tradition is under attack. Now, what happens when we tell everyone that, well, Yes, we're all the same. Women, men, we can have women leading the kirtan with brahmacharis dancing all around them, and women GBCs, women gurus. We tell them, then they feel very happy and they join. Not that anyone's going to join just because ISKCON's in line with the rest of the wacko world. But if they eventually get around, God forbid, Krishna forbid, speaking sarcastically, yeah, if they ever get around to reading Srila Prabhupada's books instead of reading some silly so-called autobiographies or something which tries to present Krishna consciousness in a very roundabout and very compromised way, if they actually get around to reading Srila Prabhupada's books, if they actually find out the truth of what Srila Prabhupada says, and generally people, if they hang around an organization long enough, they get to find out what, if they actually become a little serious, then they'll get to find out what Srila Prabhupada actually says, and they'll lose respect and reject all those who try to mislead them by not representing clearly the teachings of the person who we claim to follow. If we say that we are, our authenticity comes from following Srila Prabhupada and the Parampara, and if we find out that those who claim authenticity on those grounds don't actually do so, they depart from him in a major way, then why will we want to follow those who don't follow the person or and persons from whom they claim authenticity? This whole women's issue, it's something like the fifth canto cosmology and the moon mission controversies. It's hard for people educated in the contemporary way of thinking to accept these things. But it's there in Shastra and the teachings of our founder Acharya. How can we deny it? We can't cut out, we can, but it spiritually it doesn't work to cut out bits and pieces of the teachings that we don't like. So what's going to happen if we as a society try to pretend that we're following Prabhupada but we don't want to accept a large portion of his teachings? Then we become useless. Acharya jai mat shri mata sha tar agya langi chale sheito asha. The opinion of the Acharya is the active principle within spiritual life. Whoever tries to reject that becomes useless. So what are we doing? What are we doing playing around with Srila Prabhupada's teachings, trying to tweak them to fit to the misunderstandings of misguided people, however numerous they may be? Better one moon than millions of twinkling stars. We need faithful disciples who have yasya deve parabhaktir yata deve tata guru tasyaite katita hyarta prakashante mahatmana, who have full faith in everything that's given by guru, shastra. Given by shastra means given by Krishna. Disciples whose faith is only partial, then they shouldn't be leading this society. They're set up, they're liable to and will betray their guru and change the whole character of the religion he taught. It's there in Christianity, Paulianity. Then if we don't believe, or if we want to hide what Srila Prabhupada says, or we can't stand by it, then utpate aiva kalpate, shuti smriti purana di pancharatra viting vina. Aikantiki hare bhakti utpate aiva kalpate. What Srila Prabhupada taught was not his own idiosyncratic ideas, it's all coming from Shastra. If we don't want to follow that and practice bhakti, then according to this verse, which of course Srila Prabhupada taught us, then our so-called devotion is simply a disturbance in society. I'm going to read from Srila Prabhupada's purport to Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 331, that even though we may not be perfect, but still we should go on with faith in the eternal injunctions of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada writes, but an ordinary man with firm faith in the eternal injunctions of the Lord, even though unable to execute such orders, becomes liberated from the bondage of the law of karma. In the beginning of Krishna consciousness, one may not fully discharge the injunctions of the Lord, but because one is not resentful of this principle and works sincerely without consideration of defeat and hopelessness, he will surely be promoted to the stage of pure Krishna consciousness. So even if one's not able to follow everything, because we're not resentful of the injunctions of Shastra, we can come to the stage of pure Krishna consciousness. This point about Islam being the fastest growing religion in America, among the Christian groups, Mormons, well, they're what we might say are more traditional or orthodox Christians, won't consider the Mormons or Jehovah's Witnesses to be properly Christian at all, but these two groups are the biggest growing after Islam. So Islam, Jehovah's Mormons, Jehovah's Witnesses, they're all highly patriarchal in their outlook. Patriarchal is just what feminists hate, the idea that men should have socially a leading role. But, according to one survey I saw on the internet, because I wanted to check this out, the fastest growing religion in America is not Islam. It's not a religion at all. It's no religion. People are becoming non-religious. They may call themselves not necessarily out and out atheists, but there are many who consider themselves spiritual but not religious. They don't want to align themselves with any particular religion. They just feel religious all by themselves. So these are the kind of people who are going to support, I would suspect, that the kind of, when we're talking about the modern Western youth, we're talking about the kind of people who want to be spiritual and not religious, who won't commit. Many of them, especially the youth, are non-religious, no religion. So these kind of people are the ones who are committed to not commit themselves to any religious path. And they're also the ones who are likely to support. Yeah, we're all the same. Everything's all the same. And women, men, it's all equal. Everything's all the same. Whereas the idea of giving equal rights to men and women is not the message of any traditional religion. Even Buddhism, which is not really a religion at all, doesn't have that at all. Mayavad doesn't, traditional Mayavad doesn't support this at all. Feminism, equal rights, it comes out of Marxism. It's an offshoot, cultural Marxism. which is predicated on atheism. It's very dangerous to align with it. So this idea that having female Diksha gurus is required for preaching in America, well, it's not good for preaching in the Islamic world, which is also a huge demograph. It's not good for preaching in Africa, for China, for Russia, where feminism is, it's not dominating the discourse of social life in all these places that I mentioned. In India, thanks to various Western influences, see the book Breaking India by Rajiv Malhotra and Aravind, Neelakant Aravind, a huge tome showing how there are various influences which are trying to, and actually being quite successful in undermining India's traditional culture. So among them are Western influences who want to point or to try to show that everything traditionally Indian is wrong. Now, we may say it's good for America and get fully on the equal rights bandwagon, but then America can change also, because gachatiti jagat, the very definition of the material world is that it's always moving, it's always changing. And in due course of time, it will go back to, no doubt, because that's the way societies work, pendulum. They'll go one way and then back the other way. It may take some hundreds of years, but the point is that Vedic culture is based on the Vedas, which are eternal. They don't change. And that's one reason why people take shelter of religions, because they feel it's something solid that doesn't change. It's been there for thousands of years. It doesn't change with the wind. Then we don't need a religion. Then we can just... It's manorat. It's just the platform of the mind. Or even if we say that having female Diksha gurus is good for preaching in America, it is again Shastra and tradition, and like happiness in the mode of goodness, it won't last. It may seem good in the beginning, but because it's not based on the platform of reality, of what Krishna wants or what Krishna directs, it won't last. It might be that we make many devotees, although I doubt it. But we'll make many devotees, we get people to chant Hare Krishna. But if they, from the beginning, are opposed to statements in Srila Prabhupada's books, such that, then what kind of devotees are they? They're not going to be pure devotees. We can only be pure devotees by following the path. Mahajana yena gata sapanta, following the path of the previous acharyas. They won't accept statements where Prabhupada says that women should never be independent. If their guru is an independent woman, how are they going to accept that? Actually, it's utopian to think that preaching in America is suddenly going to blossom just because we have few women initiating. What's really required is a lot of Harinam, get the whole movement behind it, a lot of public chanting, a lot of distribution of Srila Prabhupada's books, and there may be other books which present the same clearly Krishna conscious message, just like that book, Coming Back. Very good book, but books that clearly, directly present the message of Krishna consciousness. And strong, convinced preaching. Sacrificing spirit. That's what attracted so many to join. It's the same Krishna consciousness. We're dealing with same spirit souls. There are cultural changes. Yeah, we should keep abreast of cultural changes, but the basic process of Krishna consciousness doesn't change. How about this for a project for making many devotees? What do you think, many devotees? Prabhupada, what are we thinking of when we say we want to make many devotees? Srila Prabhupada said people will join our farms in their millions. If we get 10 people to join a temple in America in 1 year, that's considered something huge, phenomenal. If we can bring 10 Westerners up to the level of initiation in 1 year, we think this is a really dynamic temple. Prabhupada said people will join our farms in millions if we had followed Prabhupada's instructions about varnashram and farms. Then now, surely, so many people would be attracted to join. Simple living, high thinking, off the grid, grow your own food, natural, protect the cows. Do we have to change with all the major cultural changes in the West? Or do we stick to Krishna's plan, Krishna's cultural plan, which is Varnashram Dharma? I'll speak more about that a little later. I use the word politics, which is a very heavy word to use. It's a heavy accusation, no doubt, that those who are promoting this feminism, equal rights for women because they are women, within ISKCON have and are indulging in politics. It's a heavy accusation, but it's documented. Reading again from that book by Burke Rochford, Hare Krishna Transformed. Very significant paragraph. Please listen carefully. This is coming from an outside scholar who is favorable to ISKCON, favorable to devotees overall, but he's a scholar and he presents in his writings from a objective, we can say, to a large extent objective. Well, supposed to. Anyway, he wrote, "The politics surrounding women's place in ISKCON," note the word politics, "the politics surrounding a woman's place, surrounding women's place in ISKCON clearly point to the way that the Krishna movement has edged ever closer to American mainstream culture. ISKCON's organizational policy now fully endorses equal and full opportunities for men and women devotees alike. Such a cultural turn, changed. It's not the same as when Prabhupada was here, when he taught us what he taught us. Such a cultural turn is significant because it signals the ways in which traditionalism no longer serves as the foundations of ISKCON's religious culture. In embracing gender equality, ISKCON's leaders aligned the organization with a defining feature of modern liberal culture. The conflict over gender equality, incited by the GHQ's determined effort to assert traditional Vedic conceptions of dharma." In other words, there was a group which was trying to assert Vedic conceptions of dharma, which was rebutted by the GBC. Burke Rochford said, "The conflict over gender equality opened a Pandora's box that may forever remain open. The debate," please listen very carefully, "the debate about women's roles and place in ISKCON led to critical questioning of Prabhupada's scriptural commentaries, as well as to his overall authority as Krishna's pure representative. the fact that the leadership failed to act decisively on Prabhupada's behalf was an acknowledgement that his authority no longer was absolute. Yet as these teachings, Srila Prabhupada's teachings, continuing Burke Rochford, yet as these teachings become reframed as guides for thought and action in place of being absolute truth. Prabhupada's teachings are no longer absolute truth. They're guides for thought and action. Traditionalism will continue its march to the margins of ISKCON. As it does, the goal of creating a viable cultural alternative to mainstream American culture will cease to exist. So that's the end of the quote from Burke Rochford. Those who joined ISKCON prior to the 1990s, they remember how ISKCON was going to provide an alternative to contemporary secular society. The goal of creating a viable cultural alternative to mainstream American culture will cease to exist because we become part of the culture to a large extent. So here we have it from a friendly scholar that for years the leadership have steered ISKCON by liberal secular values, privileging them over Srila Prabhupada's instructions and abandoning Srila Prabhupada's plans for a viable social alternative. Now, I'm going to read from a published statement of Ravindra Swarup Das, who for many years was a member of the GBC. This is published. It was in the ISKCON Cultural Journal. It's featured in the Veda base. He says that Krishna consciousness is so incompatible with the modern temperament that if we don't destroy it, it will destroy us. I'll read that again. Krishna consciousness is so incompatible with the modern temperament that if we don't destroy it, it will destroy us. Here's another quote from Ravindra Swarup Prabhu from a 1977 article in Back to Godhead magazine. Recently, a concerned Christian group made this assessment of mainline Christianity. The ultimate spiritual counterfeit is a Christianity which has been squeezed so far into the world's mold that all distinguishing authenticity has been squeezed out of it. A Christianity which is culturally co-opted, socially irrelevant, doctrinally correct, and spiritually dead. Now, the GBC members, more than anyone, should know what Srila Prabhupada's instructions are, because the GBC's only duty, its only reason for the GBC's existence, is to implement Srila Prabhupada's instructions. And clearly, Srila Prabhupada wanted Varnashram Dharma. Introducing female Diksha Gurus it's defying Srila Prabhupada's order. Yeah, so clearly Srila Prabhupada wanted Varnashram Dharma to be established by his followers. Not to do so is neglecting the order of the spiritual master and to promote something which is so much opposed to it. What is that? Opposed to it means that Varnashram Dharma means everyone has their role. Women have a specific role to play in society. So this bringing in female Diksha Gurus is the final blast. It won't be the final one because who knows what else they'll bring in. But it's like a major assault in the GBC's undeclared war against Srila Prabhupada's instructions regarding Varnashram Dharma. Now that may sound like a very heavy statement. It certainly is. But as Burke Rochford states, the fact that the leadership failed to act decisively on Prabhupada's behalf was an acknowledgement that his authority no longer was absolute. This is the platform on which the GBC has been going on for years. gender equality we see within the GBC. You can see photos of the meetings where they have all the GBC members round a table, and there'll be two sannyasis, one woman, then three sannyasis, one woman, men and women sitting together. This is, what shall I say? It certainly isn't traditional gender roles. It's certainly not according to Varnashram. It certainly would have been unthinkable when Srila Prabhupada was personally present among us. It's something very wrong for a movement that aims to establish the highest ideals of human behavior as given in Shastra, where there is separation between men and women. People may not like to hear it, but this is something we are duty-bound to implement because Srila Prabhupada told us to do it. Unfortunately, the GBC has systematically suppressed any attempts to bring Varnashram Dharma that ISKCON should be working to establish. That is systematically not only ignored it, but suppressed any endeavors to make that official ISKCON policy. I happen to know that from devotees who have tried to bring it on the GBC's agenda. For years, the GBC body has been engaged in a major operation called strategic planning. I couldn't find out exactly how many years. It must be at least 10 years. Strategic planning, in which they've had dozens of meetings, thousands of hours of devotees, no doubt hundreds of thousands of dollars spent in airfares and feeding and hotels and all this. No mention of Varnashram Dharma. Not even to say, well, maybe we'll do it later. Absolutely edited out. Talking about politics, getting back to the point of politics. The GBC resolution ratifying female Diksha Gurus was based on a 2005 paper by the Shastric Advisory Committee. But that paper was already, the points made in there were already taken to pieces point by point. The devotee who first proposed that there be a Shastric Advisory Committee and the first chairman was Purna Chandra Maharaj, who has now passed away. He later resigned from the SAC. He told me that, this in a personal conversation, he told me that he had resigned because his observation was that he was a founding member with the idea that the GBC should be guided by Shastra, by Brahmanas, by a higher level of thinking than simply political expediency. So he told me that he had resigned because he perceived that the GBC, they were not interested in the Brahminical input of the SAC, that they wanted, if the SAC came up with a conclusion that was in line with what the GBC had already decided that they wanted, then they would accept it. If not, they would just leave it. They didn't really care for their advice at all. They were treating it as a body that they could make a show of being guided by Shastra and impartial Brahminical guidance, but actually they didn't give a fig for it. I'm paraphrasing what Purnachandra Maharaj told me. And another founding member later also told me separately from Purnachandra Maharaj, another founding member has also passed away, Suhotra Maharaj, told me pretty much the same thing. He was disgusted how he and others would put in so much effort and research, and the GBC really didn't care for it unless it supported their predisposition about what should be done. They weren't taking advice. They just wanted to make a show of taking advice from the Shastric Advisory Committee. Mukundadatta Prabhu is another scholarly, saintly, apolitical founding member of the SAC, who resigned, or as he put it, was driven out of the Shastric Advisory Committee when he found that not only was the GBC no longer interested in the advice of the SAC, but on the question of female Diksha gurus, they'd practically given a mandate to the SAC to come up with the so-called evidence to support the contention, not to actually make a neutral investigation into it. If you Google Shastric Advisory Committee, you can find a whole list, which is an abbreviated history of Mukundadatta's experience with the SAC, how he was politicked out, how what he had to say was not taken into consideration because he didn't. His research, his perspective, based on reading Srila Prabhupada's books and on studying the tradition, was that FDG should not be implemented, but that was not wanted. He was politicked out. There was so much politics. Two members of the SAC were themselves candidates or hopefuls of being female Diksha gurus. They should have recused themselves. They didn't. Riddled with politics. Look it up. Google. Shastric Advisory Committee, Google or whatever search engine you use. So the whole attitude has been, from the beginning, with this, with feminism in ISKCON, the same as secular feminists. We're axiomatically right. There's nothing to discuss. If you don't agree with us, you're wrong. Just push it through, ram it through. Might makes right. These are very heavy things. I warned at the beginning of the video, if you don't have the stomach for this kind of thing, don't watch it. By now you're probably thinking, I'm the biggest offender. I've said many heavy things. But take into consideration, kindly, if you're at all trying to be objective, that I'm not the only one among what goes by the sobriquet, senior devotee, who is opposed to the resolution for female Diksha gurus. Almost all of the ISKCON leaders in India are also. So it's not just me. If you want to call me an enemy of ISKCON, then there are many enemies of ISKCON. But I don't consider, unless I am afflicted by misogyny and I'm seriously mentally disturbed, I don't detect in myself that I'm an enemy of ISKCON, but I'm trying to speak as a friend, I'm a member who wants the benefit of this society. If someone's falling asleep while driving or drunk while driving and you shout at them or whatever to get control of themselves, get control of the vehicle, you're not acting as their enemy. You're acting as their friend, even though it may appear superficially to be like an enemy. So to call names is... It's an easy way to dispose of the problem. Those who speak these kind of things, they're enemies, they're fanatics, they're extremists. I, among others, have had all these nice words said about me over the years. it may be mentally easy just to put persons of my ilk into a little box in your mind and throw it into the depths of the ocean. But that's only in your mind. Anyone who objectively studies Shastra and our tradition and what it says and how it's acted regarding the status of women within Vaishnav society will see that what we're saying is in line with Shastra. Certainly Srila Prabhupada made some cultural adjustments when he came to the West for a barbarian society. From the Vedic perspective, Western society is barbarian. The word is mlecha. All these points are discussed in a book which I wrote called Mothers and Masters, which the GBC very kindly published a resolution more or less saying that I'm not in line with Srila Prabhupada for having published it. But if you read it, what will you find that's not in line with Srila Prabhupada? It's full of his quotes. It's logically presented. Anyway, that's more that's another political thing. What's going on then if those who are promoting gender equality within ISKCON, it's more in line with Marxist, Freudian, feminist, atheistic outlooks. Actually, this whole outlook comes from atheism. If you're not in line with the Shastra, that's called atheism. The word in English for atheist, the English word atheist is translated back into Sanskrit as nastic. But if we translate the word nastic, it doesn't exactly mean non-belief in God, it means non-belief in Shastra, in Vedic Shastra. Vedna mania bodh hoilo nastic. The Buddhists are considered atheists not because, this is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's statement, not because they disbelieve in God, but because they don't accept the Vedas. Now, if we attempt to call the proponents of feminism within ISKCON to any Shastric discussion, then they won't come. I tried that. I cordially invited those who were opposing my Mothers and Masters book to come and discuss it for a public discussion. No one turned up. They won't discuss because they know they're if we take Prabhupada's statements, they can't, statements and statements of Shastra, they cannot support their position of gender equality on the basis of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. By citing a few things that Srila Prabhupada said and did in his ministration to the devotees who were just out of hippie life. He was preaching Krishna consciousness in the land of the mlechas. We have to take that into account. So any adjustments he made to Vedic dharma, they should be seen as adjustments, not that he's changed the whole tradition and that somehow Krishna's wrong in what he states in Shastra. So their attempt to make these radical new interpretations, that's what, if we see the Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 15, Text 13, that seems to fit in the category of what is called Chala Dharma, cheating religion. Now, I like to think of myself as pro-GBC, even though I've said so many things which are not very flattering to the GBC, but they're not very flattering because I'm simply describing what the GBC has done. I'm not saying everything the GBC does is wrong. But in this matter, there's some serious problems. Now, I'd like to think of myself as pro-GBC. Anyone who claims to be a follower of Srila Prabhupada surely must want to look up to a strong GBC who we can follow with confidence. Strong means what? Where do we get strength from? We get strength from following Srila Prabhupada. Not by being morally corrupt. We won't get any strength. By might is right. By arrogantly refusing calls to dialogue. Someone can bully their way around for some time, but you can never get the mercy of Srila Prabhupada that's required to implement a worldwide revolution of Krishna consciousness. Now, it's not surprising if devotees, if they feel they're being misled, that they've dedicated their lives to the ideals of Srila Prabhupada, and those who are supposed to be leading us in that endeavor are misleading us. Naturally, we may feel angry, but really, to get angry, that's natural, but to angry means the next thing is we want to fight. But to fight, we should really try to avoid it. You could say what I'm saying is now is fighting, but please listen on. We really can't afford to fight. We should try to keep a cool head as much as we can. It is hard. Try to keep a cool head. There aren't that many devotees of Krishna within ISKCON who have the aim to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. Even those who I've spoken strongly against, I'm sure in their heart they feel that they really want to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world according to Prabhupada's desires, but there's a very strong difference on what those desires are and how to implement them. But we aren't that many. We can't afford to split. Look at the experience of the Gauriya Mutt. It was a strong united movement. They fought. And they lost the potency. They lost the mercy to be able to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. Now, the GBC they often cite Prabhupada saying unity in diversity, and they cite that Srila Prabhupada said, your love for me will be shown by how you cooperate after I leave to keep this movement together, which isn't exact, that's in the Prabhupada Lilamrita, but the quote which appears in TKG's diary is something he says, to maintain this institution. Somewhat different. It's a tweaking of Prabhupada's words to bring out a different meaning. But cooperation shouldn't be in the way of just like the way Stalin got cooperation. Not like that. Cooperation between brahmanas means on the intelligent basis, mutual cooperation, intelligent basis on the basis of Shastra with purified intelligence. If we see things are going off, we may want to try to fight, to try to save Srila Prabhupada's glorious institution from becoming just another postmodern, fluffy, washed out religious institution. Even if our attempt is like Jatayu's attempt. Or we may, as so many have already done, simply leave in despair. I've heard over the years, devotees have said to me, oh, you're leaving ISKCON, you're leaving ISKCON, you're leaving ISKCON. They think I'm going to leave ISKCON. The rumors are out. Maybe some wish that I would leave. So far, I haven't left. I do feel, as I've already stated, that ISKCON, as I know it, has left me. It's not the movement I joined. And that Berg Rochford's book, the very title, Hare Krishna Transformed, that upholds that statement. What's going on is very portentous. When a leading member of ISKCON states that a large number of other senior members of ISKCON are misogynists. What's going on? We've come to a position in which there's a deep cultural divide. Schisms and splits. I've also spoken on the possibility, the probability. Actually, it's already happened. It will continue to happen, but schisms or schisms, if you're American, within ISKCON seem to be inevitable. But what we're heading for looks like a major schism. We should try to avert that by trying, we should try to come to consensus, however unlikely that may seem to be, because this issue isn't going to go away. It's just like approximately 1984, there was, among temple presidents and others in America, there was, at below the GBC level, there was a groundswell of discontent about the zonal acharya system that was going on. And it took some time, but because the American temple presidents especially, they actually defied the GBC. They went against the GBC, and by the power that they had enough power at that time to institute, it took 3 years, came to 1987, when there was the guru reform movement and the GBC made reforms in the guru system, which many think was or is contended they were cosmetic reforms. But anyway, the point I'm making is there was discontent. The GBC tried to crush it by saying that those who don't agree with us were envious and this and that. But it came to a critical mass of devotees who were consistently opposed to this, and change happened, or at least, change actually happened. It may not have been such a deep change. Well, as Ravindra Swarup Prabhu pointed out, what's really needed is change of heart, purification of heart. That's the real change that's needed within ISKCON. He made that point as a leader of the guru reform movement at that time. So what I see again is we're heading for a standoff. The issues of gender roles have been going, it's much longer than 3 years, it's been going on for about 20 years now, more than 20 years. We're heading for a standoff because even if, as the GBC seems to hope, the Indian leaders back down and they just accept, okay, the GBC said so, we should follow the GBC, and okay, there'll be female Diksha Gurus. We don't like it, but anyway, we'll go along with it. Even if they agree to that, a man who is convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. At heart, they'll remain dissatisfied, and future dissension is inevitable. It's only putting off the inevitable if we simply try to ram through some policy which is not popular. Or let's put it another way, you could say it's popular maybe in America, although not all American devotees support it. But if it doesn't have, if it has this serious non-support or opposition of a large number of devotees, including important leaders, then it's not just by diktat that you can shape the fate of a movement. Or on the other hand, if the GBC backed down, then those who were euphoric over the passing of this resolution, They will be dissatisfied at heart, and future dissension is inevitable. Either way, I'm going to read from Srila Prabhupada's purport to Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Leela, Chapter 12, Text 8. The words doibe karon indicate that by dint of providence or by God's will, the followers of Advaita Acharya divided into two parties. Such disagreement among the disciples of one Acharya is also found among the members of the Gaudiya Math. In the beginning, during the presence of Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivrajaka Acharya Ashto Tarasata Sri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupad, all the disciples worked in agreement, but just after his disappearance, they disagreed. One party strictly followed the instructions of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, but another group created their own concoction about executing his desires. So, my message going out into the ether, will the GBC listen? Unlikely, but let us put a message in a bottle and put it out to sea. Before that happens, we're on the precipice. We're on the edge of a very grave schism. Why not dialogue? Throughout all these years, there's never been any attempt to bring together members of the opposing parties, let's be frank, to try to understand each other's deep antipathy to the opposite position. Rather, the pro-FDG party has engaged in politics, which I've given just a little insight into. I'm not making it up, it's all documented. So this is very inauspicious that they simply engage in politics. It's not divinely inspired. Why, again, I suspect that they understand that if the issues are brought out according to Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, they know they don't have anything to stand on, because they're not standing on the platform of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. They're standing on the platform of cultural Marxism, actually. And they'll be exposed. So what do? Like secular feminists, they engage in politics and shaming others, misogynists. Somehow or other, they must get their way. Why has dialogue not been attempted? It would seem the obvious thing. I'm going to read from Hridayananda Das Goswami, who I widely disagree with in some ways, but this is a statement, again, from the ISKCON Cultural Journal. If you think that mavericks like myself shouldn't openly discuss issues within ISKCON, just look at the ISKCON Cultural Journal. It's got all big shots like Hridayananda Das Goswami saying things like this. This is quoting from him. ISKCON desperately needs to develop the ability to think intelligently, which means that we're not thinking intelligently. The ability to think intelligently, critically and historically about itself. When problems, please listen to this carefully, it's so appropriate for the situation that I am discussing, we are discussing, so many of us are discussing. When problems arise, we need to know that these same problems, and I'll add my own comment in brackets, or similar kind of problems. These same problems have manifested many times in the past, both within Vaishnava history and in the history of other traditions. We need to know what solutions worked and why, and which attempted solutions made matters worse and why. Wise words. Again from ISKCON Communications Journal, again from Ravindra Swarup Prabhu. ISKCON, I put it starkly, has no brain. Or at least the brain it has is underdeveloped. I leave it for you to think about. What's the solution? Ritvikism? No. You may say, well, all these things I'm saying, it just plays into the Ritvikvadi's hands. But that's another brainless idea, not supported by Guru, Sadhu, or Shastra. They call themselves Prabhupada Anugas and they claim, we're the real followers of Prabhupada. But they've also betrayed Srila Prabhupada's Varnashram movement by doing nothing to implement it. And working against Varnashram Dharma by the nonsensical idea of paying brahmacharis, and they pay everyone in the ISKCON Bangalore franchise, or Apikalo, how do you say that? Apikalega, anyway, all their centers spread throughout India. They pay everyone. Everyone's on the payroll. It's basically a commercial venture in the name of bhakti. The main thing is collecting lots of money and paying everyone, but I'm digressing. This point about getting together and why don't we discuss Buddhism? Shortly after the departure from, or the nirvana, gone, never to return. Nirvana of Buddhadev. There was a Buddhist council in which all leaders got together with those who were, because Buddha didn't write anything, but they got together with those who had lived with him to discuss what did he say, how are we to understand it, and how are we to implement it. And they came up with a template for what it means to be a Buddhist. Rules for monks and so on. And they had many Buddhist councils. And then there, as Buddhism inevitably split, the two main splits, Theravada and Mahayana, then they had their own councils. From time to time, they have councils in which they come together, they spend time. All the leaders, they may have different outlooks, but they spend time and they come up with, okay, there may be so many outlooks, but what is the official line according to the teacher of our founder? And a similar thing happened after the passing of Muhammad, peace be upon him. Don't want to get shot. Not exactly, but the hadiths were written, which were writings about what he said and what he did, because he's considered the perfect prophet, representative of God, and the Quran only covers certain topics, and then so many things from different hadith traditions come out, different schools of jurisprudence, and so many things within Islam. In Christianity, it took them a few hundred years, but eventually they had the first Nicene Council, in which they defined what actually Christianity is, according to what officially Christianity is, and everything else outside of that is heretical. And so many, they came together, they discussed, there were opposing opinions, and they, after discussion and deliberation, they came up with a definition of Christianity. And in the course of time, as different issues have come up, they've had different councils, the Catholic Church, and then when then as churches broke off, then there were different churches had their own councils. The last one was in the ninth of the Catholic Church was the second Vatican Council in the as recently as the 1960s, which actually made many changes in Catholic teachings and practices. But the point is that they came together. They said, "Okay, look, we've got a situation here. How do we face it in the light of the teachings of Jesus in the Bible?" They came together. They sat together. What do we do? How are we going to interpret this? They sat together. Thousands of bishops over several months, more than a year. They were all busy with their duties. They came together and they discussed. They didn't just say, it wasn't that one group got a majority within the leading body and just said, "Okay, we're right, bam, you all have to accept it." In that sense, they're more Brahminical than we are. That's the Brahmins come together and discuss. Another example, you say, "All right, what are you going to do? Buddhists, Christians, and all this." Although Srila Prabhupada apparently did say to study the Catholic Church for their organization. Within our own tradition, in the year 1717, a legal document was issued with a stamp from the Mohammedan government of the time, but it ratified the conclusion of a Gaudiya Vaishnav assembly, which had come together for several months in the manner of a legalistic debate. There were two parties, Swakiyavadis, who state that Radha and Krishna are ultimately married, and all this idea of the Parakiyavad, of Krishna's associating with Radha and the gopis outside of marriage, that's not correct. So it was Swakiyavadis versus Parakiyavadis, and they came together, the pundits on both sides. I'm quoting from a book written in 1925 called The Chaitanya Movement by Melville Kennedy, who was a Christian who was not disposed, or rather he was antipathetic to Gaudiya Vaishnavism, but his statement here we can take. "Both sides, both doctrines were represented by their ablest champions from all parts of Bengal and Orissa and Benares as well." They called people from all over the Vaishnava world at the time. "The Vaishnava scriptures were taken as the basis of discussion, including the Bhagavad Purana, Chaitanya's teachings, Sridhar Swami's famous commentary on the Bhagavad, Sanatan's commentary on the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad, and other less known works." Interestingly, it wasn't what the public think about us and our morality. That was not taken as the basis. The scripture was taken as the basis. Great crowds attended. It was public. It wasn't hush-hush behind closed doors. And the discussion continued over a period of months. They didn't rush it. The Parakiyavadis finally gained the victory, and in consequence, the Swakiyavadi Goswamis lost standing and surrendered their disciples throughout the country. The absolute truth cannot be two. Either by instituting female Diksha Gurus, we'll please Srila Prabhupada, or we won't. How do we know? Srila Prabhupada said, "If you want to know me, read my books." Here's another quotation from the ISKCON Communications Journal, from a review of a book called The Jesuit Tradition. The reviewer says that the Jesuit tradition is useful to ISKCON as an example of how institutional disputes can be openly aired and healthy discourse encouraged to resolve opposing views. So clearly, I'm on one side of the discussion. But I'm simply appealing to the good intelligence of our esteemed GBC members, or at least we really would like to esteem you, although sometimes you make it very difficult for us. Please don't just push this through. Take time to see what is the whole direction of ISKCON. If, as Burke Rochford says, ISKCON is now accepting the values of the Western liberal secular society over those of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, is this really the direction we want to take? This is a bigger discussion than that of FDG or not FDG. It's the whole direction of ISKCON. It's time for us to take the time out to discuss all these things in a sober way. Leave aside your politics. Let's discuss like brahmanas, however much time it takes. This is my request, made with as much humility as I can command, which you can probably understand isn't very much, but please, don't act like politicians. Act like brahmanas. Don't put Srila Prabhupada's whole mission at great risk by trying to bring something in, something, some radical departure from the tradition that Srila Prabhupada gave us and wanted us to spread, Vedic culture, cultural conquest. Vancha kalpa tarubhyas cha kripa sindhubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha.